can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
If you like this podcast, please consider supporting us by buying 7 Generation Games for someone on your Christmas list. You can buy a game or donate one in someone's name, starting at only $5. Or be a big spender and get your mom a school. Sponsor a whole school in her name. She probably has all the perfume and sweaters she wants. You can get the games at 7generationgames.com/buy.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by 7 Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars. And we have here today an amazing guest who I have known most of my life, Hayward Nishioka. If you don't know Hayward, then you've probably been living under a rock. He's been featured in Black Belt Magazine many times. He's written 5 books, 4 of them commercially available, one of them published by the U.S. Judo Federation, on teaching judo, foot techniques, judo philosophy. He's also been a professor at Los Angeles City College for many, many years, competed in the World Championships, coached at the World Judo Championships, certified as a world-level referee in judo. So pretty much anything you could do in any way, he has done. So we're going to dive right in here. Hayward said that he was not familiar with our podcast, so I'm crushed, I say, to find out that he does not listen to us every week. So I thought, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, because you've just gotten up on life, that I would let you know, More Than Ordinary, the idea was, we're a small company here at 7 Generation Games, and we did not have millions of dollars to advertise on podcasts with millions of followers, so we decided.
Feel free to send millions of dollars our way, though.
Yes, that's 401 Wilshire Boulevard, 12th floor, Santa Monica, California, 90401. Or you could go on our website. Just email us your bank details, info@7generationgames.com.
Continue.
Now that we've got that out of the way. So the More Than Ordinary podcast, what we try to do every week is get someone who we think is more than ordinary, who has an interesting story. I mean, it's really tough to get on the internet these days and everything seems to be really depressing. And we know there's a lot of really cool, interesting people out there. And Hayward is one of the coolest, most interesting people I know.
Actually, I'm just an ordinary guy.
Oh, yeah. That's not what all the people you threw said.
Well, I don't know about that because I can't remember throwing anybody. It's been so long, I can't remember throwing anybody even.
I bet they remember.
Well.
I remember every match I ever lost, and I'm still pissed about all of them.
I only remember one match where it was the best throw I ever did. It was a technique where you just went in, you saw the move, you saw the opening, you went in, the guy was up in the air. It was going to land outside, which would not have counted at that time. And as I saw the line, I pulled him to the inside and threw him on the inside. And he was so surprised, as was I. So that happens once in a while where you almost come out of your body. I can almost feel myself coming out of my body and watching myself execute this throw. And it was a weird experience, maybe psychedelic. Probably that's why I never had to use drugs. I'm always high.
I know exactly what you mean about throws like that, though. Like I was working out once and I threw this guy and I went into like a drop saying I. He tried to step over and I put my hand out and caught him with like a hand version of Taitoshi. He fell down and Danny Kikuchi comes over and goes, "How did you do that?" And I said, "I don't know."
Yeah, once in a while it goes like this where you're practicing, you're moving. And you go, oh, there's my chance. But every time you say it, the chance has already passed. And then after you've practiced enough, you say, there's my chance, and your body starts to move. And somehow or another, you get the person over. Eventually, you get to a point where you go, there's my chance, and you're executing the move as you're saying that. And then you get to another plane. Another plane is this, where you do the throw, you look at the person that's on the ground, and you go, did I do that? And now that is a little bit different than the experience that I had where I kind of came out of my body and watched myself do this throw. It was like somebody else executing that throw. And it was great.
Well, I think for me personally, those times come from massive amounts of practice. I always would get irritated when I was competing and people like, well, I'm going to learn from the Zen masters and I'm going to meditate. I was actually on a flight once sitting next to a teammate of mine who we were going over to compete in a tournament in Europe. And I said, so have you been training a lot? What have you been doing? And she said, well, I was injured, so I haven't really been doing a lot of judo, but I've been doing a lot of mental conditioning. And I said, she hasn't really worked out, but you've thought about it a lot. And she said, it sounds really stupid when you put it that way. And I was, believe it or not, Maria, tactful enough not to say, that's because it is really stupid. So anyhow, I found that the way you get those instinctual automatic reactions is you just do it and do it and do it and do it and do it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Practice makes perfect is the word that you use. Practica hace perfecto.
Oh, very good. Muy bien.
But, you know, and I think that's true for everything. So we talk a lot about math and math fluency and this idea of when you do something a million times, you don't have to think about it anymore. And I think sometimes people like to draw metaphors between sports and life or sports and other things. But I do think that there's something to be shown from actually understanding how much practice shifts the way that you're able to do things.
Well, it does shift your thinking, but I think that there are values that come about within the judo practice that extends on beyond just your practice session. Because here's a couple of things I think about. Does it take effort to do that? Yeah, it does. That effort comes from you're telling yourself, I have to go to practice, and then I have to get better. And that's discipline. And then when you get to the practice, and the neat thing about judo is that when you get there, there's a sensei, there's a teacher, there's a place to practice. It's called a dojo. Dojo in Japanese means a place to learn the way. And when you walk in, you bow, which is another value that is ingrained within the activity. Value of honoring that society has put aside a place for you to practice your judo, to practice and to get better. And I think that's about respect. Respect for not only the place to practice, but you bow when you see your instructor. It's to honor him. And he's called a sensei. That's a Japanese word. Sen means before. Sei means life. And it's before life. He has a before life than you do. And you honor that and you respect it and you learn from that. And I think those kinds of things in our society, when you practice them inside of a dojo, you also practice them inside or outside in life. So it becomes kind of judo becomes kind of a microcosm. It's a small life that has values that you utilize in your everyday life. And here's another thing that I love about judo. When you get beat down to the ground, you get up and you try all over again. You learn from your mistakes. People today worry too much about losing, saying, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that because I already lost. You know what? Just pick yourself up and keep trying. And somehow or another, in that effort that you expend, you get better. And we learned that lesson in judo. We learned that lesson by actually going out there, trying to beat the other person. And at the beginning, you may not. At the beginning, you get beat up. After a while, you go, hey, he can't throw me as well. And after a little while, you start to go, I have pretty good defense. Let's see what I can do about my offense. And you watch how that opponent of yours practices with other people and gets thrown. Then you go, maybe that technique I can use and I can dump him as well. You wear him down a bit by bit. So those kinds of lessons can also be related to your everyday life. In business, don't give up. Those kinds of things are values that your life becomes better. In fact, as far as judo is concerned, they have three maxims that I remember. The first one is self-perfection. Second was mutual welfare and benefit. And the third one is maximum efficiency with minimum effort. These are the values that we talk about all the time in judo. But if we don't stop and think about them, we'll lose them. We have to think about each one of them. What does it mean for self-perfection? To better yourself even beyond the other person. Mutual welfare and benefit is you try doing judo by yourself. You know,
you look pretty stupid.
Yeah. You have to have somebody there to compare with. And in your comparing, you're able to better yourself. And we do techniques. Techniques means that you do it with the best efficient method possible, not using all of your strength, but using the minimum amount to get the job done. So that's...
Well, and you know, I've done judo since I was 12. So that's a very, very long time. And a lot of those things I have applied to my life and to business and to math, but not all of them. So for example, the whole idea of self-perfection is one of the things that is frustrating to me sometimes when I talk to parents or teachers and they'll say, isn't there a way they could teach math without knowing they're learning math? Isn't there a way they could do things effortlessly? And I say, no, you can make it more fun. Like in judo, you can have speed drills or you can have games or, you know, you can vary practices. But no, you cannot do it without effort. You know, another thing that I've learned in judo and in math and in business is it's an iterative process. In other words, you come in, you get a little better, you get a little better. You know, I was reading something, Maria will make fun of me, as she always does, for my multivariate analysis class I'm teaching tonight. And I was reading this morning, it was on the minimum average partial technique for determining the number of factors.
Were you reading it this morning because you fell asleep reading it last night?
I was not. I was reading with my coffee. And it talked about taking the partial correlation out of a matrix and then looking at the squared partial correlations remaining in the diagonals. And I was thinking, you know, I understand absolutely every word of this with no effort, like I was reading the newspaper. But I remember when I was in graduate school, when it was a struggle and I would have to read it and I have to think, okay, what's a partial correlation? Now, why are the diagonals important? And it's the same thing with judo. I remember, you know, when I was 12 years old, like, where do your feet go and that and now? You know, I throw somebody and jump up in the air and do an armbar, and I don't give it a thought. So those things, mutual benefit and welfare, we're a little bit different company in that we're very concerned about whether kids learn from our games. Somebody asked me, we did a pilot test, and the first time we did it, the kids who played the games improved their math scores 30%, while the other kids only improved them 10%. I mean, they're in school, so expect their scores to go up, right? And so then we did it again a second year with more kids in a different school, and somebody asked me, well, why did you bother? You know, you had the data. Why didn't you just go out and sell the games and make money? And I said, because if we're wrong, those kids are never going to get fourth and fifth grade back. So yes, we want to make money, but we also want people to benefit. We want kids to have fun playing. We work on that every day. So those things applied, but the losing part of it, and here's the funny thing, like, you know, we apply for grants, we apply for contracts, we try to get investors to invest in our company. And if they don't, then I look at it as, okay, well, maybe that wasn't a fit for them. Or, you know, Maria has an enemies list. But I, you know, it's just like, okay, we didn't get that one. And I go on to the next opportunity because, you know, in business and life, there's always another opportunity. But in judo, no, I never had that attitude of, oh, I lost, I learned from it. I mean, I learned from it because I never wanted to lose that way again. And Bruce Stoops said that. He said, after you won the world championships, I went back and I looked at all your matches I could find tape of. And he said, and some of them I saw you lose, but I never saw you lose the same way twice. And I said, no, because I hated losing so much. I would go back, if I lost by somebody armbarring me, I would drill that 1,000, 5,000 times so it never happened again. I took judo losses more personally.
Boy, it's too bad people out there in the audience can't you see your eyes go into a fiery mode.
I know. Your implication that you do not have an enemies list was, I think, perhaps off.
People get on my enemies list for different reasons, is my point. If you didn't invest in us in our last seed round, you're not on my enemies list. I just figure maybe it wasn't, you know, the proper time for you. You'll be interested later on. But yeah, if you beat me, I remember.
Well, getting beat, losing, people are afraid of losing today. And that's why they don't send their kids out to take a chance. That's why if you look at even our playgrounds are played down playgrounds now. I remember when monkey bars used to be made out of metal and steel. And today, they're all made out of plastic. And the people that play on those plastic become plastic as well. And they don't have the toughness that we used to have. I think we call them millennials now, that they expect everything. You know, they expect to always win. They expect everything to be handed to them. And when they don't get that, they get upset. But I think that one of the things that's so interesting about judo is you have a winner, you have a loser every time you go out there. But for us in judo, a loss is not a loss. It's a lesson. It's a lesson that we build on to make successes. And that is another reflection of what should happen in real life as well.
Well, I always told my kids, you can learn from losing or you can learn from winning. And learning from winning is a lot more fun. So one way to get better and better is, even when you win, to go back and evaluate what you did wrong.
But the ones that I always remember are the losses. They burn in you. If you listen to Mr. Sano at the dinner, it still burns in him. That man is like 76, 77 years old. But he's still fighting the battles back when he was like in his 20s. And for that, he's better. He still fights as if he were a young man, and he's ready to go at you.
Well, and some people say you need to accept losing. And I think that's bullshit. You know, I got interviewed by one of Maria's friends from ESPN the other day, and she said, you know, your daughter Rhonda always says you have momisms. Can you give me a momism? And I said, no one has the right to beat you. You know, when I was competing, one of the things that used to get to me is we would go and we're going to compete against the Russians, or we're going to compete against the Japanese, or, you know, lately it was the Cuban women's team. And yeah, this might be more swearing than Maria wants on the podcast, but I know Rhonda, when she was going to compete in the Pan Am Games, and the first time she went down there, she said, Mom, you know, I never worried about the Cubans before, but now they're all, the Cuban women are so good, and you know, you're going to fight the Cuban. I said, Rhonda, fuck the Cubans. I broke the Cuban woman's arm when I fought her. No. No one has the right to beat you. You know, you've done judo, since you were a little kid, you go out and you do a backbend on her arm. And I don't remember exactly what she did, but she did win the Pan Am. So, yeah, that attitude of, oh, I don't think I could really win. Yeah, I don't go for that.
Yeah, you can't go out with a negative thought in your head. It has to be all positive. Absolutely.
Eddie Risky Lloyd, thanks for sponsoring a game to help at-risk students. In honor of Giving Tuesday, now through December 31st, we'll be giving a second game to match your donation.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by 7 Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars.
And I'm Hayward Nishioka.
So we were talking before about kind of competing or training in judo, but one of the things that we really want to talk a lot about is volunteering, because you do a lot of volunteering. I mean, all the things that you've done, a lot of the stuff you do with judo has been volunteering. And my co-host here volunteers, but she also refuses to volunteer with people she doesn't like. But, you guys were talking about earlier, judo, there's a lot of, I will be more polite than her, a lot of different personalities. But the first thing is, what motivates you to volunteer for 50 plus years? Because part of what volunteering is, you don't get at least a financial benefit from it. So what is it that keeps driving you not to just have volunteer, but to continue volunteering year after year?
Well, probably I'd have to go along with Anne-Maria and say, I don't know any better. I just grew up that way. And it's about volunteering because people volunteered when I started judo. Actually, when I started judo, it was like volunteering. Imagine this, going to a class for $5 a month. $5 a month. That's what the instructor charged. And if you couldn't pay the $5, he just said, just keep coming. Just keep coming. Because he enjoyed judo, because it wasn't a livelihood for him. He had a different means of making a living. And for myself as well, the benefit that he saw in helping out others, I think, was payment enough. And for myself, as I have been doing, I feel the same way. And a lot of judo people do the same thing. They go out, they give their heart to everybody. And it's one of those sports where you become a family, and it's a different way of life. And it really is, truly is a way of life. So that's why I just volunteer.
Well, and when you're volunteering, you deal with, like I said, like politely, some very, very different types of people. And whether you're volunteering or you're in the workplace or whatever it is, lots of times people have to deal with people that either they don't like, or sometimes even people that are very unethical. How do you handle that? And what have you learned over the years in terms of managing those kind of situations? Because her over here, her thing is to slap people upside the head, but you don't really seem as much like a slapping people upside the head type.
No, but I mean, when you practice, sometimes you get people that are a little ornery and you give them a little attitude adjustment with a little extra hard throw or an extra long choke or an extra hurting arm bar, you know, so.
Yeah, but you work with a lot of those referees and you're not allowed to throw or choke or arm bar them. Because if you did, you were, I would be all about that. I would be at every referee meeting.
You'd be an A-level referee.
You know, we get a special type of training, and one of the emails that I received once, I used quite often for referee training. And just imagine this, it says, this is a referee, and it's an NFL official, and he's standing there kind of shaking his head, and it's a close-up headshot only. And then you hear him, you just see him kind of grimacing, but yet keeping a straight face. And then they go to wide angle. As they widen, they see somebody on the side yelling and screaming at him and saying all kinds of things to him. And he just said, this is referee's training, to be able to take it. And that's just the thing that we have to do as referees, is to be able to stay calm and then to take it. And a lot of times when you react, it's sort of like one of those Chinese puzzles where you stick your finger in, and the harder you work to try to get your fingers out of this puzzle, the tighter it gets and you can't get out. So we try to disallow that, and we try to divorce ourselves away from any battle, verbal battle. And I think in a sense that's how we work at it, and we're supposed to learn. Because sometimes when you do the wrong thing for the wrong reasons, you get mad. A good story is the samurai was trying to take revenge on his master, take revenge for his master who was embarrassed and demoted because of a bad act that had occurred. So he finally caught up with this guy that did an awful thing to his master. And he was trying to take revenge. He went up to the guy, drew his sword. He was about to cut this guy in half. And the guy spit on him. And then this guy that was taking revenge looked at the guy, took his sword and resheathed it and walked away. And then some people watching from the side, they went up to him and said, why didn't you cut him? You had your sword out. You were ready to cut him. He spit in your face. He said, I would have cut that person in half, but it would have been for the wrong reason. It wouldn't have been as a revenge for my master. It would have been my own revenge. And I can't do it that way. I have to wait, be calm, and do it the right way.
If it was her, that person would have been chopped in half.
That is absolutely true. It does fit with one thing I always say, though, is you often are worried about the wrong people, the people who are yelling and swearing and saying, I'm going to kick your ass. Those are usually people that don't do anything. It's the people who are sitting in the corner quietly plotting that are the ones you need to worry about, because they will get you.
Yeah. The Russians say revenge is best served on a cold plate.
I say, you people are on my enemies list. You better look over your shoulder for the rest of your life, because I never forget.
Wow.
If I'm quiet, it's just because I'm planning it out.
Wow. Scary.
Let that be a message to you all.
You know who you are.
Whoa.
If you like this podcast, please consider supporting us by buying 7 Generation Games for someone on your Christmas list. You can buy a game or donate one in someone's name, starting at only $5. Or be a big spender and get your mom a school. Sponsor a whole school in her name. She probably has all the perfume and sweaters she wants. You can get the games at 7generationgames.com/buy.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary. We still have here our amazing guest, Hayri Nishioka, professor, judo extraordinaire, author, father, lots of other things we probably forgot to mention, or he has paid us off, so we don't mention. So we're back, and
we're talking about tips. So like we said, it's not one of those things where this is the one chance you have to be profound for all of history. But what are some things, we always talk about tips, and we talk about what are things that you wish you had known, or that you ended up learning the hard way, that you're like, if somebody would have told me that, it would have made things much easier. So what are some of the things that have come to mind over the course of your life, and in any of those avenues that she was just talking about, you know, as to, if I'd known this then, it would have made things much easier?
Well, basically, if I'd known how to look at other people and to ask questions, then I would have been a lot better off. My problem is this, and this happens to a lot of people that are champions. Not so much with women. Women have a different thing that goes on with them. But for guys, this happens a lot, because when they are at the top of their game, it's all about them. They're egocentric. Whereas women have a tendency to talk a lot. They'll talk to one another and they converse and they have ideas of why they do certain things, why they may have been successful. Guys go, I did it. I did it by myself, and they never ask questions of other people. They become egocentric, and in that is a problem, because they never ask questions. Why somebody else is successful, how they become successful, how they are able to succeed in life, not just in the game that they may be in at the present time.
Yeah, I think that may be somewhat true about women. I mean, I know some women who are like that. I don't think I was like that very much. Becky Scott, who is to this day a really close friend, and Julia is named Julia Rebecca after her. But her and I would talk about stuff, and, you know, maybe Dawn Beers and I, but not a whole lot. But yes, I know other women who are like that, and they're always kind of getting together in groups. And yeah, you're probably right. There are some differences. And I think that's a really, really important point that I met, well, you know him, Steve Seck, one of your students who was on the Olympic team. And when the first time I met Steve, well, was just for a few minutes with your dad. They were friends, and he just won the national championships, and I had just won the nationals. And then I didn't see him again for years, and I moved out to LA, and he was at Tenri Dojo, and I got to know him, and I said, you know, Steve, you know how polite I am, right, Maria? I said, I always heard you were an asshole, but you seem all right to me. What's up with that? And he said, I used to be, and I made the Olympic team in 1980, and we didn't go. And then 84, I missed making the team. And I had to realize I had made the Olympic team of judo and not of life, and act accordingly. And I thought that was pretty profound.
That's a good story.
And now this is your chance to say, yes, I was his teacher, and I taught him everything he knows.
Well, I think what we have to do is we have to sometimes step aside and kind of look at ourselves and say, how can we be a better person? How can we be a better citizen? And those kinds of questions should come in at least periodically in your life, along with some of the other questions that come into play. For example, what is life about? Why are we here? What purpose is there for us? And those are questions that are profound questions that sometimes don't have an answer, but that doesn't mean we should stop searching for those answers. It just means that we haven't found the answer yet. We have to just keep looking.
I don't think we can top that, so we're going to break here. And that's More Than Ordinary from 7 Generation Games. Buy our games, www.thenumeral7generationgames.com/buy. And really soon, in 2 weeks, we're going to be available on Steam, so we're super stoked. Or you can even go on Amazon.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7generationgames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7generationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.